So welcome everyone to this afternoon session. Our first paper today is Dylan Herrick and Tracy Hirata Epps, documenting segmental information for teaching and learning and revitalization.
All right, thank you very much for the introduction, and are we up? That's not the first slide, is it? Let me get to the first slide and we'll start. Thank you so much for coming to our talk. I think the title suggests what we're going to talk about. So we'd like to start by saying we find it really uncontroversial that documentation should provide detailed descriptions of sounds, recordings, words and phrases illustrating the range of sounds possible in different parts of a word and lots and lots and lots of high frequency language. The choices that we make while documenting language clearly impact how we teach and learn language. We take the idea that documentation and teaching should be interwoven, collaborative, and ongoing really as our starting point. The value of explicitly teaching pronunciation is high. We also find this uncontroversial. Better pronunciation leads to improved intelligibility, lowered perceptions of accentedness. Big salient errors lead to greater perception of accentedness. Reducing perceived accents can reduce the discomfort associated with not speaking perfectly. And since studies show that focusing on segmental pronunciation rather than suprasegmentals can have a stronger effect on reducing perceptions, we recommend focusing on segmental information at least at the start. Now, we want to talk about pronunciation because all too often it's overlooked and underemphasized in language teaching. Pronunciation is relegated many times to a quick introduction of this letter sounds like this. Please repeat after me, listen to a good speaker. And then teaching pronunciation stops and we're only paying it lip service. So we think this is because teaching pronunciation effectively is difficult. It can require really great effort on the part of the teacher and student. It can be done most efficiently by making use of technical articulatory phonetics jargon. And that's something that we don't necessarily recommend, especially in a revitalization community. So it's hard, but the consequences of not teaching pronunciation can be particularly dire. It really can affect confidence. So learners can be disheartened by criticism of their pronunciation. They may lose motivation. They may lose interest in pursuing their language learning. And our hope today is to give you some ideas and examples on how to counter this by creating a focus on non-judgmental approaches to teaching, on building confidence, and on creating environments where learners can practice without critique and work on expressing themselves in a more natural way. Whoops. So we'd like to start by highlighting a central difficulty in teaching pronunciation. It's just well known that first language interferes with our ability to perceive and pronounce a new language we're learning. And this interference makes it difficult for us to even hear where we as learners diverge from ideal pronunciations. We feel this can be addressed head-on by assisting learners to create intuitions about their own speech, to gain insight into how others hear them, and to emphasize clear, help emphasize clear communication as our goal of language learning. Technology allows us to do this, right? So technology gives us a wonderful tool to work with, especially if we have access to good recordings and documentation work. So what we'd like to focus on today in today's talk is ways to provide learners with the means of practicing and improving their pronunciation by examining tools to foster awareness, introspection, and self-evaluation of their own speech through recordings and technology. So we'd like to start this as a conversation. Ways to improve how we document and teach pronunciation. And we want to do this by focusing on two topics. To sort of bigger topics, how to use technology to help speakers create intuitions about their pronunciation, to provide visual and audio support for learning pronunciation, and to provide instant non-judgmental feedback on pronunciation. The second thing we'd like to do is to talk about how to simplify and de-jargon information to make the technical but essential aspects of pronunciation more learnable, more accessible, something that can help both learners and teachers alike. And we note that in order to do this well, it really requires a robust, detailed, and often quite technical documentation. I'll hand things over.
So as I go through some of these examples, we've broken it up into four different smaller examples. As I go through and think about, you know, what's the documentation required in order to make this happen? How can I make this happen? We're going from diagrams and examples to screeners to visualization and then kind of ending with platforms. Sorry?
Can you talk up, please?
Sure.
There's an air conditioner up the back here that's
not the No worries. Yeah.
That's funny, I think.
Teaching voice, right? So these kind of, you can see a little bit of a progression from more of a simpler piece to more advanced, but each of these can be broken up. None of these is the answer to anything. We're hoping it just gives you some ideas. So the first one we want to start with, let's start highly technical. This is a little much. It's not wrong. It's very useful. It talks about the face and, you know, where sounds occur. But yeah, let's not do this. So if we try something a little better, oh, wow, it's simpler. No, this is still too much. Because if you have a learner come in and you're like, this sound is made way down here in the esophagus, you're done. They can't pay attention anymore. So we can simplify down to something like this. That's still a lot, but it's less overwhelming because it's actually got words within it. But I want to break that down even further to something that seems a little friendly. Oh, that looks more like my face, less abstract. And it's got vocabulary in there. So the documentation piece is what vocabulary is going to be the example. Is it useful vocabulary? Is it functional? Can I walk away from this lesson about pronunciation with actual words? And then once you get that, then you can go towards a more abstract that becomes a node or a reference point that has, here's my vowel sound, here's where they're made, I can remember that. Or if that's still much, you can combine those two into one where you've got the face and the abstract melded together. So we just played with a lot of different things that were out there trying to find different ways that this can be put in front of learners. Then you can break it down into, okay, here's how it is for each individual sound. So you can go from way too much down into simple and then break it down into discrete points like this and combine that with, which is often in grammars, you know, the first page, sounds of the language, here's what you need, read this, you're good to go. But if you combine it with how they're made, then it becomes something more straightforward and you can start with very simple sounds. So adding audio.
Ichja. Muche.
So you've got the position in the mouth where the sound is made, plus you've got very simple yes and no sounds. So it's a nice starter kit of, I'm talking about the mouth and how to articulate, but I'm giving you words you can use. Then you can put it all back together once you've broken up the pieces. This is the Iowa Sounds of English site, but they have other languages as well. And they have the sound, so this thing is actually animated and will show how the sound works. The person here is animated and will make the sound she pronounces. And then they've got sounds in initial, medial, and final position. And that's a key that I'm not sure is always documented well, is to have that sound in multiple places. So this, again, can be a little overwhelming to an early language learner, but once you walk through the steps, this becomes an excellent resource. And I teach English as a second language as my day job. I've used this a lot, but I had to work up to it. The first time I said, hey, here's this awesome site, absolutely overwhelming. But building up to it was used all the time. The other thing I'd like to talk about is articulation screeners. So these are often used to determine if somebody has a speech impediment with young children or with adults, maybe post-stroke, to see what's going on. And so what it does is it screens individual sounds. So they typically look like this. You've got pictures that people will say. So the question is, what is this for each item? And then the examiner has all the words written down and the particular sounds. But Jared and I worked together to think about what would be the sounds in Miamia that would be more difficult. A lot of the sounds cross over to English, and so we picked out long vowels and pre-aspirations and started to build a screener. And these can be made also with pairs of minimal pairs so that you can tell where the sounds are. But when you're doing a screener like this, you don't want all the sounds together. You got to mix it all up so they don't know exactly which sound you're focusing on. So they go through and pronounce each of the sounds, and then you've got a record of, okay, that sound came out clean, that one's, we need to figure out a way to practice, and you can go back to the first things to work on their articulation of those.
Cool, thanks. So the next part of the talk, we're going to discuss acoustic and audio software and technology and how that might be used to help teach pronunciation. So technology goes hand in hand with documentation. And we know how to use technology as documentary linguists. That's easy. It's how we adapt that technology so that it can be useful for teachers or learners that is really matters, and that's what's at stake. So the goal with this part is really more how do you get learners and teachers to be able to build intuitions about the sounds that are unfamiliar to them and that might be hard for them to perceive based on their first language or the language they come to. So there are lots of free ways to record, listen to, and examine speech. Phones are everywhere now. You can record sounds, play sounds. There are lots of apps to look at aspects of sounds. You've probably heard lots of things about that today. Pratt is wonderful. It's a wonderful tool for linguistic analysis. It can also be easily adapted to a classroom setting. Audacity is similar, possibly more user-friendly, powerful in other ways from Pratt. And then there are a whole bunch of other things that you'll hear about and may have heard about in recent talks yesterday and today. The key is to get students to listen to authentic language and then to have them record and listen to themselves so that they can get that comparison and contrast and build intuitions about their own speech and where they might be. Yesterday and today, there have been a bunch of talks that this is not an example, an exhaustive list, but Mizuki Miyashita and her collaborators talked about Matilda and building pitch art, so you can see pitch, which was kind of neat. Mark Richards and Josephine Lardy's talk on audio chunks was neat, like building, taking archived recordings and getting them into small enough pieces that they're usable, understandable, repeatable. Sonia Bird and her collaborators talked about seeing speech, which is just what we're talking about. In fact, that's what the next slide is about. So things like Audacity, this is a screenshot from Audacity, and it's like very easy to show something like vowel length. So here's a short vowel. Now there's a long vowel. Short, it's like this, and now it's a long vowel, it's longer. You can see the sounds you're supposed to hear, and seeing sounds can really help people learn sounds. Tracy and I worked on Cherokee Tone a little while ago, and we had a bunch of work with Pratt, and we like did lots of cool stuff and got lots of data out of it, and it was totally useless for the classroom, but it allowed us to build basically images of what the tones looked like. There are about six different shapes to tones, basic shapes, and that's what this was. So we could plot them and graph them and then build them into a PowerPoint so that people could use, listen to, and get a good introduction to tone when, you know, you look at the Cherokee syllabary and it didn't indicate tone. Native speakers knew what to do because, hey, it's just that word, I know it. But if as a learner, what do you do? So, wait, what's tone? Tone, that's just this word is this and that word's that. So, I'd like to just show you what we were able to do. So these are the six tones that you'd hear in Cherokee. They're coded out in different colors. You can sort of hear it and see it appear at the same time, and you get the sense of what, oh, they are different, and they're right next to each other. And you can also easily transfer this, and with the data and recordings you're making, to say, like, let's focus on just one tone in particular. So let's look at the low-falling tone, maybe get a couple of speakers. Sorry, I'll do that again. I didn't want to interrupt Durbin. So you can listen to this and then.
Ganali, Klutlu, Sengi, Gugu, Kostu, Naski.
So that could give you a sense of like all of, here's what you're supposed to be hearing, and it helps people. And we found at least we were able to test this in Northeastern State Tahlequah Cherokee classes. And it was something that really the students reported really being helpful. There's an idea of, you know, the prot stuff was not what you take to the classroom. It was the output of that, and how can you do that, and which recordings will work, and how can you go collect things that are maybe not what you're documenting, because if you're studying Cherokee, what you're not interested in are the monomorphemic little bits, but these are great if you're interested in trying to teach sound. Okay, moving to our last topic is websites and other sort of software that you can use. I just wanted to highlight the website at Berkeley as a source for inspiration for us. This is not designed for language revitalization. It's designed for linguistics students to go learn about different aspects of their linguistics classes. But it's got some really neat stuff that I think we should steal. So here is just some screenshots from it. They have a bunch of recordings. They give you some words, and they gloss them in English. And then you click a button, and it plays a sound. And you have to say what word was that. So you type in the English gloss, and it says, correct. You're like, oh, cool. And so you're like, I'm going to learn my Mandarin fricatives here. And you type it again, and you're like, correct. You're like, this is great. So you type it again. It's like, no, that was the other one. You go, oh, man, the best feature this has, you can't see it at all, but it keeps track of your score. So it gives you like, oh, you got it right. Now you're one out of the 10 things that you've done. And then you got the second one right. You've got 2 for 2. And then you got the third one wrong. And you're 2 for 2. And you get the third one, you hear it again, and you get it right. You're 3 for 3. And I just think that's wonderful. It's like, oh, I am getting this, you know, even though it took me 3 times to get the third one. But I really like that little touch. I think we should steal that. It really helps build confidence, especially with something that's new. So anyway. Starting to sum up, we think you should use things like the websites that exist, like the Iowa Sounds of English, that can be informative for showing how sounds are articulated, but you have to build up to get there, right? So it takes, you can't just launch in, you have to slowly build up to get to that point. And that means spending more time on pronunciation, spending time on doing that work. We think you should get inspired by websites like the Berkeley Phonetics webpage and try to build your own. And speaking of building your own, many of us are based at universities. We have online course support software, things like Canvas or Blackboard or D2L. And at a lot of places, we also have whole support teams that are there to help us build our courses. And if you want to make quizzes that have audio embedded in it, you can ask them for help if you don't have it yourself. So many of us have resources right at our fingertips, even if we don't have the technical website building technology. It's also pretty intuitive, and other people have done sound things that you can easily adapt, especially for Canvas. There are free software places like Edmodo and so on that you can work with if you're not at an institution with a big support team. So things like that. So. The moral of the talk is that a small investment in training can lead to a big payoff in terms of allowing people to create better awareness of the sounds of the language they're working on, of providing opportunities for learners, even when access to teachers may be limited or access to good speakers. It also provides a safe space for working on pronunciation, a risk-free a space for working on pronunciation when, in some cases, there can be judgmental feedback on how you're doing that maybe you stops you from trying in public, right? So we wanted to, I was typing this up as I walked in the door, I think, because I wanted to, I think there was something wrong, but allowing documentation and teaching to inform one another is what will let this happen. It's not that you do the documentation and then you scavenge that for teaching. It's that you do the documentation, you're starting the teaching, and the teaching says, hey, we need this. And like, oh, we don't have that documented. We better document that. And it just goes back and forth in a circle. We think that can help. So what we talked about, We gave some ideas of how to build up to more technical material in teaching pronunciation, how to build in usefulness for diagrams, examples, and that sort of technical phonetic knowledge, but you have to get there slowly and step by step. We talked about using screeners to get a sense of where we are for and how people are doing with the production of sounds. So are they actually doing it? Well, you can do a screener and that can help out. So stealing something from speech pathology to help us with what we're doing. We talked about providing, using software to visualize speech. So how we can see what we need to hear and speak. And then we looked at a couple of websites and ways that you could build that in to create interactive online platforms to provide chances to work on pronunciation outside of a classroom context. So while you're documenting, we hope that you will work on making your very technical linguistic information more teachable, learnable, and accessible to students and teachers alike, that you will do things that will help us hear ourselves more as others hear us, create intuitions about our own pronunciation, and hopefully integrate pronunciation more into your language teaching. We need to thank Jared for his voice. John Ross and Durbin Feeling, also from earlier work we did on Cherokee, need to be thanked. David Costa at the Miamia Center also needs to be thanked. The University of Oklahoma's Center for Teaching Excellence helped me start mocking up some Canvas quizzes with sound. So thanks to many others. In fact, thanks to many people who, all these people you can see so clearly, who published things that helped give us ideas or confirm some of what we thought were our ideas. And we'd like to leave you with something, some sound to see. Mahalo nui loa. Questions? We've got another slide if you'd like, but yeah.
I'll ask a question. In the materials that you're doing, have you gotten elders to give you feedback on that? And another related question to that is, there's a lot of variation in these languages because they haven't been standardized.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is low-level phonetics that drives people against each other. Politics around whether you aspirate something or not is outrageous,
uh-huh.
Right? Whether it's numba or numba. Yeah. So what have you dealt with along those lines?
I'd like to turn you to Olivia. Olivia and Chris gave a lovely talk yesterday about dealing with exactly that and the idea that recording all of that provides ample information for discussion and talking about it and what does that mean and what communities use it. So they really do have a lovely talk on that. Some of this, so with the Cherokee, we did run this by other speakers. So we had a core group of people who did the recordings and then we ran this by other people to see if there were was agreement in what was going on. The other stuff with Miamia, I just started playing with it recently, actually, and we'll see where that goes.
Yes, I had a question. So just as a garden variety linguist, I was familiar with all of the ones except for the screeners.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could tell us, for those of us who don't have experience with using that, how we would get examples of them and how we could start to build those into our own program.
So screeners come from speech pathology, and it really is looking at when somebody is being identified as something seems off, and so they're pretty fine-tuned. But I've actually used this in ESL classes, and I use this particular one very, very happily, very successfully. There's several others. This one's free. That was cheap. In determining how to do that, I think it's a matter of finding the match in the words. And so when I was actually doing this, this is where I was talking to David Costa, the linguist who works with Miamia, and we went back and forth trying to find illustratable words. Yeah. So he was sending me great words. I'm like, I can't draw a picture of that. Yeah. I can't find something. So that's where that forethought about what to document comes in. So, but, I mean, you could do it for all the sounds. I just kind of tried to focus on what would be different.
So if you wanted to do this, you would try to need to find sort of minimal pairs that you're trying to teach, maybe enlist someone to help you draw pictures or use existing pictures to illustrate them?
I think that's the way to go. I did, you know, free clip art, but I think it would be nice to, if the drawings were familiar culturally or had some sort of tie and were kind of all similar. The minimal pairs aren't necessary so much as initial, medial, and final, or multiple opportunities of the same sound so you can see if it's carrying in different environments.
And I don't want to monopolize it, but how do you give feedback to people when you use the screeners?
So there's multiple ways. With adults, I go ahead and say, here are the sounds that popped out to me as a little bit off, and then we'd come up with ways to work on them. My students are adults, and so they came up with their own plans to work on it. With children, it's typically you don't even go over those kind of things with them. You notice where they have difficulty, and you set out a plan of prioritizing which sounds to work on, and then you come back to it.
I was curious about whether you did any assessment on the level of acquisition of tones using that matching between the tonal representations mm-hmm. and then the words.
Yeah.
So, do you want me to talk about
that? Yeah, you should talk about that.
Okay. So, actually, and this was a question that came up when we were working on sharing it and publishing it. The decision was within the community we were working that there would be no assessment of that because tones were considered something very difficult and there was a lot of fear. If I can't make the tone, I don't want to study the language because somebody's going to laugh at me. So we actually did no assessment, but we did make quizzes where they could check themselves so that they could do the audio or they could mimic and do it back for themselves. So it was more self-assessment. There was no community judgment on that because we wanted to remove the judgment factor because this was an area that ended up being a difficulty area. So it was meant to be a help, and we did not assess that.
Yeah, no, thank you for that clarification. I guess what I was interested in knowing is whether there was assessment of this technique or strategy or the how effective it was in facilitating
from
process,
the
which
feedback.
I understand, I mean, if you assess, it's very difficult to tease apart the assessment of a strategy versus the assessment of the individual.
Yep.
But I was just curious, and the reason I'm asking is because there's a number of revitalization projects for tonal languages trying to figure out what strategies to put in place to teach effectively, and so I'm curious about how effective this was.
The assessment we got was more feedback about it. So we actually did a survey afterwards and asked whether they felt it enhanced their abilities. Whether it did or not, we don't know, but they felt that it did. And the language teacher at the university was incorporating this into his class because he didn't have any pronunciation pieces at all. And so this was something he uploaded to his own Blackboard site, accessible to students. So we had the intro set, we had two quiz sets, two quiz sets that they could do on their own, and they were all there to be done whenever they wanted. We went with PowerPoint, we looked at several platforms, we went with PowerPoint because everybody in the classes knew how to do it, so we didn't have to have a technology learning session and this as well.
The other thing we did, you know how when you take PowerPoint sounds and you've got your sounds in your folder and you put it on a new computer but the operating system's different and now the sound's gone and it won't work? So there's a sneak way to get sound into PowerPoint and we use that. When you animate sounds, you can have like a little whoosh or this or whatever, and if you go to the animation and select that, there's at the very bottom it says other, and it allows you to upload your own sound as long as it's a WAV file. Now I haven't done this with tons and tons of sound. I'm not sure when you crash PowerPoint by doing this, but we've been able to make, you know, get, I don't know, a few tens of words into these things, and then it ports to anyone's computer when they open, because it's part of PowerPoint now. It's not a separate sound file that, you know, has its link broken.
Yeah,
So that was helpful.
I'm sorry, I think unfortunately we're out of time in this session, so I don't want to delay the next paper, but can you join me in please thanking our presenters?